Welcome to the Scottish Watches podcast. We have our returning guest. We have a guest that, it's been nearly 3 years since we first had him on the show. Thankfully, the first time was pre-anything nefarious in the world. Everything was great. Everybody was singing Kumbaya. We met up on a sunny day over in Edinburgh, walking down Prince's Street, and it was a fantastic introduction to a brand. Not just one brand, but multiple brands. But he's here today again. You've read the title. You've seen the thumbnail. We have got with us Robert Brooke. How are you doing, sir?
Yes, very good. Thank you. Thank you for the kind intro as well. You made it sound like it was I'm not sure it was a sunny day.
Well, every day that is above 4 degrees in Scotland is considered sunny.
Yes, that's true. I was told that it's always sunny in Scotland, but it just must be me that brings the bad weather, I think, follows me around.
Well, you're going to be bringing the light today because we have much to speak about. It's been a while since you've been on the show. I think you've been on for a couple of inserts. We've obviously spoken at length behind the scenes about things, but it's been a busy time for you and the amazing company that you work for. Now, for the listeners that don't know, because it has been over a couple of years since you were last on, how about you give us the quick 60-second intro on yourself and what it is you do with Grand Seiko, for anyone that maybe doesn't already know?
Yeah, well, I just want to quickly say congratulations on where you're at with the podcast from when initially we first had a conversation on here. I think it's come on leaps and bounds, and just want to say congratulations to you guys.
Oh, thank you very much. Done.
In terms of us as a brand, we've gone from strength to strength over the past couple of years, which is great. And I mean that not just in terms of in the UK, in terms of sales and awareness and the great client base we've got and the events we've done. But also from a global perspective, we've created some brand new movements and made some huge leaps forward in terms of that. And we've even opened a brand new watch studio in Shizukuishi, which was designed by the famed architect Kengo Kuma. Hopefully we can stick some picture of that in the footnotes because it is beautiful. For me personally, I have been with the company now for over five years. I initially came on board to help launch the first ever UK boutique, which is situated in Knightsbridge. I then became the national training manager for the UK and Ireland, then later the sales manager for Grand Seiko, which is largely looking after the wholesale network. And I am now the brand manager. So I focus more on general overview and brand perception, PR, knowledge, helping out our marketing team, and generally a Grand Seiko ambassador for us here in the UK and Ireland. So I guess a bit of a jack of all trades I sound like there, but interestingly, actually, I actually heard the full version of that quote recently. Do you know what that is? Because I always thought of it as a negative thing to be called a jack of all trades.
Jack of all trades, master of none.
Yes, but that's not the full quote, I'll tell you.
Okay. So we're all about education.
So the full quote goes, "A jack of all trades, a master of none, but oftentimes better than a master of one."
Oh.
Well.
So there you go.
There you go, listeners. Only a couple of minutes in and you're getting the good juice.
Good.
So that's my justification from the varied roles I've had within the company. But it's been a great experience. And as you guys will know, over the past 5 years or so, I'd say 12 years since the brand launched globally, there's been huge changes and we've come on leaps and bounds here in the UK.
100%. We also have Dave Sharp. I kind of got ahead of myself there because I was so excited. Rob was on the show. Dave, how are you doing, sir? Are you feeling better?
Feeling better after feeling atrocious about a week ago. And I know that you're not feeling super perky yourself at the moment either. But yeah, feeling good. A little bit tired. I've been flying and jetting around the world, so slightly jet lagged. But altogether good. Had some sun, which is a glorious thing to behold. But of course, I'm back in Scotland and it's always sunny here, so it's fine.
Good. Well, we should probably do a wrist check to keep things in flow and in check. Robert, you are the guest of honour today. What you got on the wrist?
I'm wearing the Grand Seiko Skyflake today, so the blue dialed snowflake, which you see on the blue croc strap. It's my go-to at the moment.
Excellent. When did that one come out?
Oh, you're testing me now.
We'll ask you about products that you sell. Would that help?
I would estimate 2018, but yeah, it came out after the Snowflake.
I think it was the back end of 2018, early 2019, maybe, wasn't it, that it came out round about then?
Yeah, yeah. I would say that more confidently. Say, yes, 2018.
It's an interesting piece, that, as well, because obviously with the Snowflake being that, I guess a lot of people who know anything about Grand Seiko, the Snowflake is, in many people's case, their go-to first Grand Seiko product. You know, it's the one that they know about. It's the one that they talk about the dial. And with it being titanium, though, I guess maybe not in a negative way, but some people, maybe titanium is not the first luxury watch to buy. They're maybe into stainless steel. And with that piece you're talking about there being stainless steel, that's a really good alternative for people's first kind of foray into Grand Seiko.
Yeah. And I typically wear a suit for work. So it's quite nice being on the leather band. I think it makes it kind of smartens it up a bit more. And I'm a sucker for a blue dial. So that kind of sky blue is something I really love. And obviously featuring the spring drive movement, having that gliding second hand over that blue dial, for me, it makes it one of my main pieces, or favourite pieces. So how about you guys? What are you wearing today?
Okay, Dave, you like coming second? Hit us with it.
I do like coming second. So I felt really guilty. I'm wearing a Grand Seiko spring drive as well. But unlike Rob, who's slightly savant when it comes to codes, I just throw numbers and letters at the ceiling and see what sticks. But I actually looked it up to get it accurate. And I am wearing an SBGE245G, which is otherwise known as one of the GMT Sports, with the sapphire bezel. This one, I think, is a limited edition. This is the one with the red dial that came on a bracelet, but also with a rather punchy, bright orange rubber strap, kind of diver strap to it. A watch that I hadn't worn for a little while. I tend to go more for my 44GS case Grand Seikos rather than this, but having had the Skovla, which we'll maybe touch on later, come out quite recently, the shape came back into my head and I've really enjoyed wearing it. Actually, it's a big watch, but doesn't actually wear as big as its size would allude it to. So yeah, been wearing that, enjoying it again. Nice on the rubber strap when the weather's beginning to get a little nicer. So that's what I'm wearing. Ricky,
when did you pick that up?
When did I pick that up? I think that might also have been a 2018 watch. I think that was around about 2018 that one came out. Probably not any earlier than that, because it's not a dual Seiko Grand Seiko dial on it. It's just the Grand Seiko, which I think was that, Rob, around about 2017, 2018 they began to change.
Yeah, so that's when it was established, and it changed over then. So any produced after that would be the new dial, GS at 12 o'clock.
Yeah, so that's I'm pretty sure it's a 2018 model. Really do enjoy it, and it's that model's not changed hugely actually from then till now, other than there being some more interesting dials out there with it, but that model has been pretty consistent since it first came out.
Yeah, it's really nice with the sapphire bezel as well, isn't it, and having the feature of three time zones. I even thought in the past of maybe doing a short video or something of how to use a three time zone, because it sounds very complicated, doesn't it? But it's actually done in quite a simplistic, usable way, isn't it?
No, absolutely. And it's actually one of these watches that, as you say, I forget quite often it's got the ability to do three time zones, because with that rehot ring having it, it's quite subtle. It doesn't shout at you. It's a nice way they've done it, in that you can just subtly look at it to get that time zone if you want to use it for three zones. So yeah, really cool piece. So yeah, a wee video would be quite interesting, I think, on that. So over to you, Ricky. I don't believe you've got any Grand Seikos. I know you've got plenty of Seikos, but what might you have on the wrist this fine evening?
Well, Dad, thanks for dropping me right in it there, making me feel inadequate as usual in the presence of legends and gods here. I don't have a Grand Seiko, but I've got a great Seiko, and it is my only Seiko, because I only have the one, and this is my Paddy Diver, my budget James Cameron, I like to call it, because it's got the gradiated dial. Absolutely love this thing. Started wearing it more and more now, as much as I've got so many watches in every week to check out. This has got the best loom of anything that has ever come through the doors here at Scottish Watches. It's got the Zeratsu polishing, which is obviously a thing that's usually kept for the higher spec models in the Grand Seiko lineup. The filament dial on it is just incredible under micro magnification, and even when the light catches it outside. And it has got one of the best rubber straps that conforms and contours to the shape of my wrist. I think I've had this since 2018 as well, so it is a 2018 meetup of the Seiko boys. Absolutely nothing bad to say about this. My favourite part probably is the anodized blue around the outer circumference of the bezel itself, something that I've not seen. And this colour scheme, the way this is laid out, it just stood out because it's different from most of the Seikos that I've seen before. It was a departure, and it really jumped at me when I saw pictures of it. I think that's one of the reasons that obviously I plumped for it those many years ago. Even the hardware on it, the keepers, everything is fantastic, and it punches well above the price point that I paid for it, which I think was around about the £510 mark. So really like it. My only Seiko, I've spoken to Rob so many times about, oh, I spotted this Credor. Oh, I spotted this Grand Seiko. When's this available? When's that available? Oh, that's not available in this country yet. Oh, I'm going to have to wait. And then I forget about it by the time it comes out. So one of these days, perhaps even maybe after Watches and Wonders, there might be something that we can talk about that I might actually end up with on my own wrist and my own watch box. And this is a point to mention at this moment in time. We're recording part of this show ahead of Watches and Wonders, but there are embargoes and NDAs and things that we're not allowed to speak about until during the show itself. So we're also going to record live at Watches and Wonders and drop that into the end of this show. So if you notice that the audio quality suddenly changes slightly and there's more ambience, maybe less barking dogs in the background, but more ambience, you'll know exactly what's going on. So anyway, on with the show.
Yep, so moving along, it was interesting, a couple of things that, you know, mentioned there. Ricky's wearing a Seiko, obviously you're with Grand Seiko, so maybe for a lot of the people who, they may have heard of the brand, but they might not have that kind of level of knowledge about the brand. Maybe Rob, you could give us just a little kind of brief potted, you know, history and the brand story, because, you know, this is a brand that is coming out of the bigger Seiko watch house in Japan, and, you know, there's quite a lot of stories about Grand Seiko, King Seiko, all of these different brands that people may have heard of but maybe don't quite know the full history and story. So maybe a little potted release. And I think it's also fair to say that, you know, this whole range of Grand Seiko has not really globally been available for that long a period, albeit has been available in Japan for much longer. So could you give us a bit of a kind of feel and a bit of a kind of understanding of the history and the brand?
Yeah, I will try keep it relatively short.
Shorter than Dave's question.
We do have a vast history, especially coming from Seiko through to Grand Seiko, and I want to try give a good overview so people can really try to get to grips with it. So yeah, so just I guess a starting point to note on this is Grand Seiko was obviously born from Seiko, hence why you said earlier that dials up until 2017 used to be dual branded, so have Seiko at 12 o'clock and Grand Seiko at 6 o'clock. The company is, or the brand of Grand Seiko is run by the Seiko Umbrella Corporation, which is, this current CEO is Shinji Hattori. And it's, what's really interesting about that is it's remained in the Hattori family since 1881 when Seiko was established. So it was Kintaro Hattori that founded Seiko in 1881. And to this day, it stays within the family, which I think is quite hard to come by for kind of a watch brand, especially to that size nowadays. And what I really love about that is that they can stay true to their roots. And right from the very start of in 1881, where it was called Seiko Sha, Kintaro Hattori wanted to build every component in-house and therefore have the ability to create every type of timepiece and take on challenges and, in his words, stay one step ahead of the rest. So I think that is one key part that we need to really highlight from the history, is that being from Japan and the way that they developed the company and the ambitions that we had as a company, it was important to become an in-house manufacturer. And that's something that is a key point of difference often for Grand Seiko as a luxury watch brand, having that in-house capability. Grand Seiko itself was born in 1960. So it was a time where there was a lot of inter-competition between the two main factories to try and make the best and most precise watch they could for the Seiko brand. So one of the factories came up with Grand Seiko, hence the name, to try and make an exceptional Seiko. And right from the start, it was all about long-lasting precision was part of the vision, and they wanted the Grand Seiko to be as practical a watch as it possibly could be. That is how we came up with the key pillars that every Grand Seiko has been built on up to this day, which is legibility, precision, ease of use, and beauty. Another really key point on from 1960 would be a 1962 design graduate called Tano Tanaka. He wanted to design the watches to have sharper angles and have distortion-free surfaces. The idea was to make them sparkle with quality, in his words. And in short answer, that would mean to have light. And that is how, to this day, we really have a focus on the play of light and shadow and that Japanese sense of aesthetic that we have today. So from there on, there's obviously been a number of advancements, and what we've done, always striving to make a better watch. And you'll know that we have three different calibers within Grand Seiko: quartz, mechanical, and spring drive, which again is a really huge thing for a luxury watch brand to do. The majority would generally focus on one particular movement type, namely mechanical generally, but Grand Seiko continue to really push the horizons on all those three areas. And as you noted there, it was only 12 years ago in 2010 that Grand Seiko were established as a global brand. So that was a very whistle-stop history on Grand Seiko and how it's come to be and the kind of philosophy as to where it came from and where we are today.
I think a little point to maybe pick up on there is you mentioned about these three kind of movement styles, so quartz, spring drive, and mechanical. And I think it's fair to say, as you mentioned, most brands will focus on one and may have the odd model within the range that does something else. But is that a big thing, you know, within Grand Seiko that they very much continually push the technology boundaries of each of those types of technology? Do they still see that as being key to who they are as a brand?
Well, before you even say that, should it not be noted that Seiko Grand Seiko invented two of them?
Yes, it's very well highlighted. with that, the quartz was launched in 1969 on Christmas Day as a quartz Astron.
Merry Christmas, Swiss watch industry.
So with that, you can see that this gives really great precision and a very robust movement, but it doesn't have that romance of a mechanical movement, which a lot of people love. That initial quartz watch, a lot of people will think of quartz watches as very affordable nowadays because of the price point. But the initial quartz watch, that Quartz Astron that was launched, was actually relative to the price of a car at the time. So it was a pretty pricey piece because it was this new fantastic technology that had been created, which has obviously massively dominated the watch world on a mass scale. The quartz watch massively outsell mechanical watches by units. So it was a huge enhancement and something massive to bring to market. And as noted there, spring drive, kind of quick history lesson on that. That was a gent called Yoshikazu Akahane. He basically came up with a concept to make an everlasting watch that has that's much more precise to 1 second per day. So he almost wanted to take the best of both worlds. So we now have this fantastic quartz movement that we've brought out in 1969 as a company, which is robust, accurate, but doesn't have the romance of mechanical, which people really love, that craftsmanship, working with springs and gears and telling time kind of really organically through that. So his mission was to combine the two and make what he called an everlasting watch, so something that would power itself and not require a battery, but be exceedingly accurate. It took 28 years to realize that dream, to create kind of an automatic spring drive caliber that was brought to market. And that's how spring drive was born to be today. That is a fully mechanically driven watch that is accurate to 1 second, or even surpasses that nowadays with a number of models. And that's how spring drive was born. But yeah, two of the three, they were the first to market, and spring drive is still patented and exclusive to the Seiko Corporation.
Yeah, excellent. And obviously behind the scenes, Seiko are known for providing the engines to many other brands. So they're almost the Japanese watchmaker's watchmaker.
Yeah, how we've come up with the quartz and even the spring drive is because we have a huge electronic background as well. So the factory where spring drive and the quartz are made, it was it's in Shinshu and it's called Seiko Epson. And you probably heard of Epson printers, for example, but there's a number of even machinery that we create and make ourselves for even our testing purposes or manufacturing watch parts and being able to create things to a larger scale. So it's a huge, huge operation we have. So it's only through these kind of these technologies that we have and the bright and intelligent designers that we have within the team of Seiko that we can create these kind of proprietary movements. So it's a great thing to have under our roof.
So maybe moving along slightly from that, as you have mentioned, obviously the kind of genesis of Grand Seiko growing out of what was Seiko Watch Corp, and you know that desire for pushing for kind of perfection and high end timekeeping. One of the things that you know we often hear is you know Seiko are such a huge company that make watches from you know very much you know entry level area, a couple of £100 or less, right through into the ultra high watchmaking. How have you found it, and how has the brand found kind of changing the perception of what some people think with regards to Grand Seiko? Because obviously in Europe, maybe we're used to some brands segmenting brands to different price points, whereas Seiko Grand Seiko, sometimes maybe people feel it's the same thing. You know, you sometimes feel people question that, but I think you seem to be making a very good success and a lot of inroads into lifting Grand Seiko out and up into the premium watch sector.
With Seiko and Grand Seiko, they're very intertwined. We're very proud of our history and heritage, and as noted previously with being within the founding family, it's important to remember our roots and how Grand Seiko came about. On the dial itself, it says Grand Seiko, so it's something that will never be completely separated. But what's important to remember is the brands have different philosophies and aims and targets, and it's similar to many other watch brands. There's crossover in terms of types of movements or designs, but each brand has its own identity and philosophy. So what we need to really focus on for us as a brand is what Grand Seiko does and where who we are. And we obviously, as a brand, hold Seiko in high regard. There is crossover in terms of even price point or movement calibers. You can find spring drive within some Seiko watches, which from my perspective makes perfect sense. If we have this fantastic movement and we've got some high-end Seikos, why not utilize that, especially for diving watches? It's a very robust, accurate, legible, precise movement. So it's very important that we utilize these movements for both brands. But as noted, Grand Seiko has its own pillars that it stands upon. And the price point generally for Grand Seiko starts at a minimum £2,000 and goes upward to hundreds of thousands. And yeah, I think it's key to just keep a focus on the identity of Grand Seiko and our philosophies behind that. One of the themes we have running through Grand Seiko that sticks true to our heritage and history as well is the nature of time. So this is a very Japanese kind of spiritual concept. So in Japan, they have a very unique view of time, and the passage of time can be tied in with nature and the changing seasons and how that is celebrated. Also, not only influenced by that, but our meticulous craftsmen that seek to accurately capture the passage of time within our watches.
Adding on to what you said there, I find that Grand Seiko is potentially one of the only brands that nobody ever gives a hard time to in the community, online, when people are discussing different brands, different price points, and it's seen as the thinking man's choice. Whereas anybody can walk into any place and pick up other brands, it's a considered choice because people have to do the research, they have to understand the concepts, the background and the history, and that leads them to buying the watches because they understand the full philosophy and they buy into it because it's been going for so many decades. It's got a history that is right up to date, and as we discussed, a couple of technologies you guys have invented and honed over the decades, and no other brands really seem to have that.
Yeah, I think a lot of the points you kind of touched on there are interesting and true, in that, you know, with the, you know, Grand Seiko's only really been available outside of Japan in, you know, the last, you know, 10, 12 years. And I think it's, I've certainly seen the brand move from being almost like maybe a connoisseur's choice. So people who know a bit about watches and understand and watches are their thing. And they've almost had this wanting for Grand Seiko, but not necessarily been able to easily access it. And they've began to be able to access it, but it's not initially been that mainstream brand. But I don't know about you, Rob, how are you finding things? You know, obviously you're very close to the brand. It seems to be becoming more popular. The kind of lay watch person now seems to be much more aware of Grand Seiko as a brand, and it seems to be a product that's much more on the radar of people when they maybe have, let's say, £5,000 to spend. It's definitely in the running from day one in terms of what they might be looking at. Are you seeing that change in the kind of people's narrative?
Yeah, as you noted previously, there was kind of a watch anorak's go-to brand, and a lot of big watch enthusiasts almost wanted it to stay that way, almost like a hidden diamond that the wider world weren't aware of. And I think as a brand, we've started to explain who we are and what we are to the wider audience. As noted, it's only been available globally for 12 years. So to actually portray that message to the wider world is difficult in that amount of time. But realistically, you know, we want to get across that we are a Japanese brand and we have great in-house manufacturing skills, and hence why we're tying those kind of philosophies like A Nature of Time to try add storytelling to our remit as well, to be able to tell a story and add emotion to our watches, to the audience, because previously what we as a brand have always focused on is the movements more than anything else. And as we've touched on them, they are incredible. And that's why the watch enthusiasts have always loved the brand for the movements. But it's important to now also tell a story of where the watches come from, how they're influenced by Nature of Time, and what that means, and how you can kind of, you know, really fall in love with the watch on your wrist, not only for the actual movement, but what has gone into the watch, from the case to the dial, across the whole portfolio of what goes into a watch.
Well, I've got a couple of questions on the movement side of things there. It was, I don't know if it's true or not, but it was kind of a common knowledge thing a few years back that because the movements were so finely crafted, that to have them serviced and repaired, they would have to be shipped back to Japan. Is that the case? Has that ever been the case, or has it changed nowadays?
Nowadays, and for past, since being global, we have had trained watch technicians in key areas such as in Holland, here in the UK, we have a couple of trained GS watch technicians. So most Grand Seiko watches can be serviced within the UK. There are some vintage pieces or particularly complicated or VFA perhaps that might not be able to be serviced in the UK, well, that would go to Japan. But our turnaround times are very quick, but the majority can be done here. And I think those kind of misconceptions and people getting to grips with who we are, what we do, and these kind of things where you can get this stuff done here in the UK has helped lead to the substantial growth we've experienced here. As a network, we've grown to over 26 points of sale, and that's quality points of sale here in the UK, you know, across our own boutique. We've got James Porter's in Glasgow, Chisholm Hunters, Watches of Switzerland, Goldsmiths, Harrods, Berries, and many more, which are great quality retailers. I won't list everyone, but as I said, all of them are fantastic retailers. And I think we noted at the start how much of a difficult couple of years it's been for everyone as a whole with the pandemic. And 2021 for us was actually, for growth-wise, a fantastic year. And that kind of speaks to how we're doing. So in the year of 2021, from January to December, we actually grew in the price point of 2,500 to 10,000, 144% year on year. So that kind of shows the kind of trajectory we're on as a brand year on year, and that kind of price point that we're looking at. So it's fantastic that it's getting more widely noticed, and that general public are considering Grand Seiko as a brand they want to buy and learn more about, because it is a fantastic brand once you start to go down that rabbit hole, so to say. And typically we've always been a brand where it would be a watch you might buy after you have a couple of watches and you've started to discover watches and you come across Grand Seiko. But I mean, I'd like to ask the question back to you guys. What do you think? And have you seen much more of Grand Seiko? Have you heard stories of people looking at it as a first watch option now?
The reason I mention about the service thing, because that was one of the questions that constantly came up in the communities online, was, oh, well, if I buy one, it's going to have to be sent away. And you know what it's like sending a watch away to a different country. It can be away for a year. Glad to see that myth dispelled. because that was one of the barriers to entry, I suppose. But no, I'm seeing people talking about Grand Seiko all the time, the different colour schemes, the different seasons that come out, and there are more and more people looking at them as their first luxury watch choice, especially since other brands are playing fast and loose with waiting lists and allocations and the old boys network. So I think that's great. And you mentioned COVID and all the rest of it happening. I only really got the full picture with GS when I came to your event that you ran in association with Hodinkee and Red Bar, both in London and in Glasgow, obviously Glasgow being local to us. And I came down and I got to see all the watches, got to meet some of your designers, got to listen to the talks. And that kind of opened up a little bit, because you can get something from a website, you can get something from a YouTube video, you can even get something seeing one or two watches in a shop. But to get the experience and to be able to speak to people like yourself and your team, that kind of opened the doors for me.
Yeah, that's great and a really good point. And that's something we are focusing on doing more of. We have launched the GS9 Club, which is a members club as well, where we can start to do more external events, where we can invite retailers and their clients, and along with try to support them and give perks to our members, but also further events. We were showcasing at Watch Pro, and we are obviously next week, where we will be catching up again, going to be showcasing at Watches and Wonders, which will be a great privilege, and it'll be fantastic to be doing a watch show again. So we're definitely getting our message out. One thing to note as well, in the last couple of years, we've extended our warranty up to 5 years, so that obviously helps in regards to what you were asking about servicing, getting watches repaired. It's always good to know, especially when people worry about watches going to Japan, to know it's got a 5-year warranty is a great extension. So yeah, it's something we want to look at more, is involving people and doing events and getting the message out. And I think the key thing with Grand Seiko is you have to see it in the metal. I've said it so many times, pictures just do not do the watches justice. I know one watch in particular that I think you're a fan of, David, the Shunbun, the Cherry Blossom Seki, tie into the Nature of Time. that piece there, when you get the dial and you see the spring drive watch hand gliding across, and actually see even the high intensity titanium in the metal and see how bright the appeal is. It's not kind of a dull grey. It just speaks volumes, in my opinion.
No, I totally agree. And if, you know, we continually say, regardless of the watch brand, you know, the watch industry's pictures are generally so heavily processed, they just do not do justice to the watches. But more than any, I think that goes for Grand Seiko, in that, you know, one thing pictures just generally can't pick up is things like the Zeratsu polishing, the multifaceted edges in a lot of the cases, and the dials, because you just can't, you know, you really just have to move that dial around in daylight to see the play of light on the dial to have any real feeling of what it is. I know with exactly that watch you mentioned, the Shunbun, is that some people say, oh, it's too pink because the picture they've seen is very pink. Some have said, oh, it's not pink enough because the picture they've seen is very silver. But you can almost not describe that watch truly. You just have to put it in someone's hand and let them play with it in the light to actually see what it does. Absolutely. I think, you know, we've talked a lot about the movements, but I think the other real big area that really does catch people's attention, and more so now, is the dials, the textures, the colours, the patterns. And, you know, I think compared to almost all brands, they pretty much do it better than anybody in terms of variety of styles of dials and textures. You know, there's lots of brands, sure, do certain things very well, but I don't think I can think of any other brands that do such a variation in types and styles of dials that all are up in the kind of upper quadrants of quality.
Yeah, well, that's very kind of you to say. And the idea really is to take the person to that point in time or evoke that emotional feeling. So, for example, that Cherry Blossom one, it's part of what we call a 24 Seki. So it's kind of, the Japanese calendar is split into 24 seasons, which kind of give more precise timings. And initially it was so you could predict kind of future times for planting for crops, et cetera, because four seasons is very broad. But that one in particular is the spring equinox, and the kind of cherry blossom trees are being celebrated as beautiful. And I actually heard someone within Grand Seiko from Japan actually say, and he talked about the cherry blossom, he said that they're celebrated as beautiful, but not only when they're in bloom, but when, you know, the buds are attractive, the fallen petals, and as they go down rivers and streams, and you can see that play of light and shadow, and see the myriad of colours. And it basically says from the beginning to the end, the Japanese enjoy the journey and the passage of time. And I think that kind of romance of it, and trying this piece and having that cherry blossom, that kind of spring equinox piece on your wrist, and seeing that spring drive, which, you know, is such a fantastic engineered caliber, glide across the dial, along with the high intensity titanium, which again is an in-house manufactured metal, which is designed with, you know, I think it's 30% lighter than steel, hypoallergenic, and has a very bright appeal. It's when you get it on your wrist and you learn all these things and see this, and you watch the dial, you think, wow, this is something special.
Yeah, it's like having art on the wrist.
And I think it's interesting, a couple of the points you made there is, I know that maybe in the West, you know, in Western Europe and the US, we can sometimes be a little cynical of marketing and the story and the spiel that goes with a product in general, because, you know, we are in a market where marketing can be king. But I think a lot of people don't necessarily understand that the Japanese culture and lifestyle and Japan in general, they are much more driven by these philosophies of nature. You know, it's much more day-to-day for them. It's not something that's made up. And we sometimes are maybe a little over cynical about things like that. But these genuinely are areas of Japanese life that are very important to them.
Well, having said that, 24 seasons thing, that's one every half month. I never knew that. So that kind of makes a lot of sense for some of the things I may have said in the past.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because when you read, you know, you read the narrative sometimes about some of the dials, and it's a very, very short specific window in time. But, you know, you read about it's something that happens in society, and that people in, you know, the average person in Japan would recognize that story. Whereas, you know, I don't think it's, I think we in this Western world don't necessarily align
jaded
with that.
Western
or don't,
world.
Yeah, we don't understand it more. And I think the more you read about the kind of Japanese philosophy, the more it becomes apparent that it is something very important to them. Whilst we were, you know, myself and Ricky were over at Dubai Watch Week, got to see all of the GPHG category award winners, and standing there proudly was the White Birch from Grand Seiko as the men's category winner. A pretty big moment in time for the brand, surely.
Yeah, we're very proud to win the men's category. It's obviously a very prestigious award to win. And the White Birch, we're particularly proud of this watch because, as you said, it's not only inspired by nature in terms of the White Birch tree forest, which can be seen from the Shizuku Ishii studio where the caliber is created. So it has that kind of textured dial and almost makes you feel like you're lost in the White Birch forest. But it also embodies a number of other things. So I mentioned earlier the 1962 Gram of Design or Grand Seiko style, which was to spark with beauty and have that play of light and shadow and make the watches stand out. In 2020, and this is one of the watches that showcases it, we brought out an updated design philosophy, which we call the Evolution 9. So this is 9 points that's either been taken from the Gram of Design and either enhanced or replicated or brand new elements added altogether. And this White Birch was one of the pieces that has embodied this new design philosophy. Not only that, but it also features a brand new high beat caliber, which is a 9SA5, which is a fantastic new addition to the movement or the caliber lineup.
Well, high beat, that's something we haven't even spoken about yet that you guys are pretty famous for as well.
This new high beat caliber that's in the White Birch, it has a number of enhancements on our previous high beat calibers, which is 36,000 vibration per hour or 10 beat timepieces. So with this, I won't go into too much detail, but the key enhancements are we now have an overcoil on this movement, which took over 80,000 simulations to find the perfect curvature for the overcall for the isochronism.
What's the benefits of that?
Basically, it has an anchor point to help with the isochronism, so it actually helps the swings to be more consistent by giving it an anchor point. And as noted, we actually designed the testing machinery, as we are so in-depth in-house, to actually do prototypes of this curvature to get the perfect one. So there's 80,000 simulations to get the perfect curvature. We also have a free sprung balance rather than a regulator arm balance. There's also a dual impulse escapement, which we could do a whole podcast on its own, which is a new patented type of escapement where one of the arms hits the balance directly, so it's much more efficient. We have a twin barrel, so this high beat caliber, even though it's running at such high frequency, it's got an 80-hour power reserve, which is incredible, and a new horizontal gear chain, which has not only made it with the twin barrel higher power reserve, but it's also with this horizontal gear chain a thinner caliber, so it's ticking boxes all around. You noted spring drive. What's really exciting with that as well is in the same year we announced the 9R A5, which is updated accuracy to 0.5 seconds per day. This is achieved by having an integrated IC and quartz oscillator that is temperature compensated. It also has an offset magic lever, which allows us to also create a thinner caliber. We've upped the power reserve on this spring drive from 72 hours up to 120 hours. And we have a centerpiece bridge, which makes the movement more robust as well. So, so this particular piece is more precise. It's got a larger power reserve and it's slimmer and more robust.
Ticking all the boxes. Well, that is all we really have time for before we jump in the DeLorean and jump forward 1 week. And our DeLorean's been modified. It doesn't just go through time, it also goes through space. So when you next hear us in a couple of seconds, we will be over in Switzerland enjoying life at Watches and Wonders. The new releases are out. We've seen them. There's no embargoes. There's going to be no problems talking about these. Tell us all about them. Where are we going to start?
I think we've got three key stories here. So we've got the Evolution 9 Sports Collection that we've announced. We've got a kind of real high-end complication Grand Seiko that we'll move into later. So we'll leave that to the last, I think. And we've got a jewellery piece to talk about as well. So maybe if we kick off with these Evolution 9, that'd be a...
Let's do it.
I think we should do that. And everyone should check out the show notes. We'll have some kind of little follow-along diagrams to kind of explain the Evolution 9 concept about why that's... what the changes are with regards to the kind of grammar of design, which is something that has been a tenant of Grand Seiko since the very start of the brand. So if you're unsure of what Evolution 9 is about, have a look. And Miziel will have updated the show notes.
Yeah, perfect. So as David said, we've got these Evolution 9 collections. It has evolved from the Grand Seiko style or grammar of design. So we are staying true to our roots and heritage, but moving forward into the new design and new technologies. So let's kick off with the Mist Flake. So we've got two different GMTs here. So the grey dial that you can see is a Mist Flake, and this one is a beautiful grey dial, and this is inspired by the mist that can be seen in the Shinshu region of Japan, in that mountainous region. The early morning, it's a sign for good weather to come, and it's a beautiful textured dial that you can see there, David. This is a high-intensity titanium piece, as are all these Evolution 9 sports pieces, and incorporate that new design philosophy. So it's really beautiful.
Check out the show notes for pictures, because my descriptions probably won't do it justice. But so as you say, it's that titanium material. But this is the big thing with Evolution 9 is the new wider lug and the wider lug gap with the bracelet, which allows the watch to sit a little tighter and closer and more stably on the wrist. But yeah, the dial in this one is pretty exceptional. Again, another thing that everyone has come to expect from Grand Seiko is dials that either shout loudly or are very subtle, but are excellent nonetheless. And this one here has, I was going to describe it as snowflake-esque, but it's also very different.
Very well spotted. The technique of creating that dial is very similar to the same way we would make the snowflake dial. So it'd be a stamped dial and then coated. They don't say what the coating is that they put on top, but that's how they get the texture. So it's a new dial style, but very similar in terms of the concept of design process as a snowflake, which is obviously a hugely popular dial. So I think this is going to be a big hit this year.
Yep, absolutely. 24-hour fixed bezel on this one. Allow GMT with the spring drive.
All these Evolution 9 pieces are actually spring drive calipers, so they all have that beautiful gliding second hand.
Excellent, really nice piece. And you say there is a sibling to this with a different dial?
Yeah, so this one is not, it doesn't have the same textured dial as the Mistflake, but it's a beautiful kind of matte black dial, so it has fantastic legibility, and you can see those indices and the loom on the indices and hands, so it has great legibility, and it really plays with the light on those indices, so it's a very beautiful. And I think I heard someone saying earlier, black is back. So here we are with a beautiful black dial.
Am I right in saying that part of the Evolution 9 is the, especially at that 12 o'clock marker, is the additional facets that have been added to it?
Yeah. So they made those facets larger at the 12 o'clock marker to make that stand out and be more legible. So that's all part of this new design concept, Evolution 9.
But with this one, obviously having the addition of the loom in there as well. So with those facets and the loom, you get all those different plays with the light and shade. And with these two pieces, are either these limited edition or are these both core collection?
These are both joining the core collection, so which is fantastic news. Of these that we're going to look at today, of these Evolution 9 sports pieces, only one of them is a limited edition, so it's great to see that these are going to be available going forward in our authorised dealers in the UK.
Really cool piece, and I'm a big fan of titanium and watches. You know, I know people do from time to time say, oh, I wish it was steel because it's heavier, but I think they're missing the point that titanium just gives you that real wearability, and once you've had a kind of, you know, a fairly hefty sports watch on your wrist for, you know, multiple hours during the day, you'll come to love that lightness of titanium and the kind of comfort that it brings with it. And I also love the slightly different hue the metal has. Yes, you have the Zeratsu polishing on here, but you've got that slightly more silvery, bluey, grey tone to the metal, which I really enjoy. So yeah, really nice, these two pieces for the GMT spring drive.
Create that one in terms of the actual alloy. We create that ourselves, so it also has that brighter appeal, and as you said, with the Zeratsu, but it also features hairline polishing next to the Zeratsu to have that beautiful play of light and shadow and make that Zeratsu polishing really sparkle with beauty. So it's a beautiful piece.
So we should move along because there's something quite new here. You know, I think it's fair to say that in Grand Seiko, it's a brand without a huge number of chronographs in the range. It's a bit more unusual to see a chronograph in Grand Seiko, and there's something all new.
Yeah, so there's two different chronograph GMT choices here. One of them is limited edition, so it's a blue dial, blue bezel piece. On the rotor weight at the back, there's also a gold Grand Seiko lion emblem, which symbolizes that it's a higher accuracy piece to 10 seconds a month or 0.5 seconds a day. The black dial variant has the accuracy of 1 second a day or 15 seconds per month. And the difference obviously being that one is non-limited. The blue dial is 700 pieces limited worldwide. And obviously that movement along with the coloring is different. Other than that, everything is across similarities with both these watches. They're both high intensity titanium, and what you'll really like about this, Dave, I think, is the bezel is made of, it's a sapphire bezel now, which is really cool, and it's actually a rotating bezel, so you can use three different time zones on this watch, so it's a pretty cool piece in terms of being a spring drive chronograph. So it tells to actual lapse time because of that smooth second hand chronograph and three different time zones, which is really cool.
So within the range currently, the GMT Sport, which is an existing model, that has that sapphire coated bezel, albeit a much deeper bezel. Is this only the second piece within the Grand Seiko collection to move to that sapphire coated bezel?
Similar to the watch you were wearing when we first started, yeah, they have sapphire bezels, but in terms of models, yes, this is new for this particular model. So it's kind of borrowed from there, and having the rotatable bezel on that is also new to create it a three time zone piece. And it's a really smooth glide when you turn it, isn't it?
Very, very much. It feels like, rather than being a kind of click bezel, it's a friction bezel, which is bi-directional. But, you know, from the one I'm holding in my hand, doesn't move easily by being bumped. It does need to be deliberately moved, which is, you know, a nice feature. But yeah, it glides very nicely, which for me ties in with that whole spring drive smoothness of the second hand. You know, you don't have that kind of more aggressive ratcheting you would get on a dive bezel. So I think there's a nice kind of harmony there with this watch. And unlike a lot of models where sometimes the limited edition really just is a change of colour, this one has that more premium movement in it, which I think is a nice little kind of almost hidden secret upgrade for that limited edition piece, which is not something that you see all too often. Quite often, as we say, it's really just a tweak the colour and make it limited. But I think as a limited piece, yeah, this is an interesting piece.
One thing you'll notice as well is a lot of our chronographs in the past have had those very large pushers, which some people love and some people are not such a big fan. So this model obviously has a smaller, almost slightly recessed pushers, along with the new Evolution 9 case design, which has incorporated a new crown guard, which makes it much easier to slip under the wrist as well. So it's a great looking piece.
The existing chrono accurately described as having quite prominent, you know, I believe that they also screw down top hat style pushers on the existing chronograph, whereas this has a kind of semi-recessed, more how would I describe them, almost piston-like pushers. You know, it's a smooth board body that goes into the watch, so as you say, it will slide under the cuff and the sleeve much more easily than before. So yes, lovely. And so there's that piece. And then moving on to the final watch within this collection of Evolution 9 launches is the one that I must say is my personal favourite, but I do like a diver. We'll have given it away. So Rob, what have we got here?
So I'll whiz through this one very quickly so we can jump into the other pieces that we've announced.
Ah, no, you can shut up now because this is the one I like.
Go on then, take it for us, Ricky.
I sat in on one of the presentations with Grand Seiko, and this is the one that jumped out to me because the dial is super symmetrical. It looks, I don't know what you've done with the dial, but it looks almost carbon fiber in effect. It's obviously not carbon fiber. You've magically come up with some kind of way of doing this. It feels fantastic. It's super lightweight, but it's also wearable. It's not the usual titanium feeling to me. It's as if you've upped the ante somewhat. And this could potentially be my first Grand Seiko.
Yeah.
And here's the interesting point. Anyone who listens to this podcast knows that, you know, that every watch out there, you know, always aesthetics are an important play. And Ricky's not the world's greatest fan of the on-the-dial visible power reserve. He likes the ones where it's hidden in the back. And this watch has
a symmetrical power reserve,
which, you know, is appealing to your, you know, kind of aesthetic. And I was somewhat surprised because I saw this watch and I thought, Ricky's going to love this watch and he's going to say, oh, I wish the power reserve was in the back. And absolutely did not. He absolutely is into this watch. He's currently holding it. He's looking at it like he's caught me looking at many watches. And I must admit, it is my favorite. It's quite a big watch, if I remember rightly. Might be wrong. Check the show notes. I think this is a 43.5mm watch. But Ricky's now looked at me as if, no way. It's kind of got a vibe of a 40-41 about it. It just doesn't even look like a 43.5, and on the wrist doesn't either. It's just, yeah, it's a great looking watch. This has movement wise in it.
So this has the Grand Seiko spring drive movement that was launched in 2020, the 9RA5. So that means it has the more accurate precision, so 0.5 seconds. It has 120 hour power reserve, so 5 day power reserve. It has the one piece bridge in the middle that holds most of the gear chain, so it's more robust, and it's a slimmer caliber, so it's more precise, it's more durable, it's got a longer power reserve, and it's slimmer, which, I mean, I don't know how you managed to get all four of those into one new movement, but we've done it, and there
it's
it is.
It's the unicorn.
Yeah, and what I'd just say as well, when you catch this, and hopefully we can get this across in a picture in the show notes, the dial on this is actually, the nickname for the watch is Ushio, which means tide, and as you'll know, Japan's an island, there's many small islands around it, so it's archipelago of islands is what they call the black tide that goes up to the North Pacific through some of these smaller islands, and that's what this dial creation is inspired by, those, that black tide that is going through the archipelago of islands. It's very cool.
Right. Quickly move on to the tourbillon before I buy this.
He's actually genuinely enjoying this watch.
The one that caught my attention was the tourbillon.
Yep.
Because I ended up packing up my gear at the end of the presentation and all the Grand Seiko team were there. And I was the last person in the room, so they were asking me questions. What do you think of it? And I said, it blows my mind because I would never in a million days have said that that is a Grand Seiko, because it's always a link to the past. There's heritage, it plays an important role. But the design philosophy, the way it's been engineered, it's futuristic. How
it's
did it come about?
It's a technical tour de force.
Yeah, it is. It could have been a one-of-one piece at £1 million from any other brand. So how did you guys come about it? What's the story?
So I think a key thing as well to, is almost to recap on what we said earlier about the pillars that Grand Seiko stands on. So we've got legibility, precision, beauty, ease of use. And that's always kind of restricted Grand Seiko from making complications, because it's hard to have a tourbillon, yeah, with, you know, I mean, recent tourbillons have, you know, tend to be more of an artistic style and not necessarily as accurate as you would expect. And it does make the watch generally less legible. So it's not something we've really explored with Grand Seiko in the past, but this watch is, we have great legibility because of the play of light and shadow. And even on the hour hand, we have a six facet to catch that light on there. On the constant force cage that rotates at one tick per second, there's a ruby on there, so that counts as a second hand. It's also hacking, so you can stop that, set it accurately. Precision, another pillar. So with that, this is actually the most stable, precise Grand Seiko we've ever made. And that's achieved by combining both a tourbillon, which obviously counters your axis of gravity, with a constant force that keeps the power consistent for 50 hours to that tourbillon. So generally, when a mechanical watch has a mainspring and winds, the amplitude is affected on the balance, and that can affect the timekeeping. So this constant force for 50 hours keeps the amplitude and the accuracy very stable, hence me saying it's the most stable Grand Seiko we've ever made. And one thing I'd say about that is there are other constant force tourbillons out there in the market, but this is the world's first in regards to it being in one structure on the same axis. And you might say, oh, well, that's a bit of a stretch of a world's first. But
here it comes.
The point of that being is you don't want any friction or any distance between that constant force to the tourbillon. You want that to be as close as possible to, because you want it to be effective and get that power straight there. So not having those friction points and having it directly there.
You don't want the losses in the system.
So having it there on the same structure, on the same axis is more efficient in terms of that. So it's fantastic. And not only that, we look at another pillar now. So the next pillar could be beauty that we've talked about. So we've got this beautiful play of light and shadow. It has a combination of high technology. So it's in brilliant high intensity titanium and platinum 950. So it's technology times precious metals, a combination. It's got beautiful hand finishing on it, as you can see. And the tourbillon constant force itself dances beautifully. And when you look at it, it's quite hypnotizing, and the sound creates what they call a 16th beat in musical terms. So not only that, they've created a really beautiful sound, and that's done because it's a four beat frequency constant force, which is also the only one on the market that does that. So that combined with that one tick per second creates a 16th beat rhythm in terms of musical terms.
The way I would describe that is it's a two-track percussion. That's what they said at the presentation. Hold it to your ear because you won't understand what we're talking about. And as soon as you do place it against your ear, you understand.
Yeah.
Everything you've said is true, and I know that you're obviously Grand Seiko, born and bred, dyed in the wool, etc., etc. I'm not. I don't own a Grand Seiko, and that blew my mind. That is one of my top picks from this entire show.
Yeah, good. I mean, the feedback we've had for this has been fantastic, and the watch, the actual nickname for the watch that it's given, because of this kind of inorganic beat that comes to life through both sound and sight, and also gives the watch life. We've called it Kodo, which in Japanese means heartbeat. So it's a beautiful piece, and as you said, sticks to those pillars of what Grand Seiko stand for. So it's the first time you've seen a watch like this, but that's because it's hard to combine all those elements into one watch of this kind of complication, and it's really, really made headlines.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I completely agree with Ricky in what he says is, on first glance, when you see that watch, it is very different to what a lot of people will expect from Grand Seiko. But the more you look at it, and the more you begin to process things that are going on and talk to the people who, you know, have designed it and kind of engineered this, the more you can begin to identify those little facets that is what absolutely makes it a Grand Seiko. And I think it's a technical tour de force. It's a great looking watch, and the sound is just absolutely exquisite.
I would say it has got the historical heritage values of Grand Seiko with a futuristic vision.
Yeah.
That's unencumbered to the past.
I don't know how I can top that. I think you've just concluded the show for us there. You just stole the show.
We are at the end of the show. That has been a masterpiece. It's given me a lot of depth and insight to Grand Seiko that I didn't know. And I try and keep up as much as I can on things. And from the last time we had you on for a full episode many years ago, this has been a bridge from the stuff you told us when we were back in Scotland to the stuff that you've obviously explained to us that's been released unembargoed while we're here. And you were right, you said to us, just wait. Wait until the embargo drops. Wait until you see what we've got for you. Other brands can say that. You delivered. So thank you very much for coming on the show, telling us the history of Grand Seiko, explaining more details about it, and then just at the end with that tourbillon. One of my favourites, possibly my favourite of the entire show, out of every brand that's here.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you guys for taking the time to come have a look, and I'm really glad you've enjoyed what we've released.
And remember, check out the show notes, because there is a plethora of technical information, pictures. We can describe things. I'm kind of okay at it sometimes, but the pictures will just allow you to see it. There'll be a little video that explains things, and there will be some, hopefully, sound files that will allow you to hear that little rhythmic noise that comes off that movement. So there's that, and I know that there's going to be lots of things coming between now and the end of the year as well, so hopefully we can get you back towards the middle or later this year to talk about things that we sadly can't talk about at this point, but there's more excitement to come.
Excellent.
Watch this space.
So thanks very much, Rob, and it's been great having you. Hopefully you've only got a few days to go, and then you can go home for some well-deserved rest, because we are heading off after 3 days at the show for a nice relaxing weekend at home.
We are indeed. We're packing up the microphones, heading back. It's been a whirlwind tour. We've said this many times on the show over the last couple of episodes, I would presume, recording this just now, sitting here in Geneva. But it's great to be back. Absolutely loved it. We weren't here for enough time. That's the problem. There was too many things to see, too many things to cram in. But we've absolutely loved it. We can't wait to come back. And I can't wait to see what's coming next, because I'm not privy to it, because you guys are so on the money when it comes to embargoes. We had to travel to Switzerland to find out what you were going to explore and what you were going to explain to us. So thank you, and check the show notes. Check us out on Instagram at Scottish Watches. If people want to find out about Grand Seiko, you've got a UK Instagram account as well, don't you?
Yeah, Grand Seiko UK.
And there are many dealers up and down the country in the UK and beyond. Obviously, we've got many international listeners. So what's the best website for everybody across the world to check out if they want to find out where the local dealers are?
Grand-Seiko.com.
Straight from the horse's mouth. So thank you, Rob, for coming on the show, and we will catch you guys again soon.
Yes, thank you. Bye-bye.